Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations.
It's the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. The Early Morning Late Show. Get your day started.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Welcome to the show. It is Monday, October 9th, which is nicely sandwiched between October 8th and October 10th. They do that every year, so I think it's impressive the way they pull that off. Today's Columbus Day, and I think Columbus had a lot in common with today's teenagers. When they leave the house, they don't know where they're going. They don't know when they'll be back, and they're doing it all with somebody else's money. Those are teenagers today. So anyway, we've got a great show today. We've got Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, is going to be with us in just a minute. And Adam Carrington, our political analyst from Hillsdale College. We're going to talk about a little bit of gun regulation and some things that he knows much more about than me. So that's going to be interesting as well. And Tom Nelson's coming up from a new project coming up, a seminar out that's going to be interesting. I'll tell you about that a little bit later in the hour. And then Dr. David Aikman, who I always find to be so fascinating. He uses lots of big words. I always have to have a notebook and a dictionary out when I speak to him. But boy, is he smart. So that's what we're going to be doing for you this morning. And I think I saw a note from Paul that we've got a frost advisory that could be happening anytime soon. And that means that, it's going to get colder. So we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Patrick, my good friend, which we connect with every Monday morning at 8 minutes after. We'll be back in just a minute. It is 6 minutes after the hour. Good morning.
To stop by on your way to work. The Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold on Faith Radio. If the front door's locked, use the secret knock.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could
while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain.
My head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
And of course, that music means it is Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, is on the Skype line. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning. I am Skypeable.
You are definitely Skypeable. I'm looking at
it's a Monday.
It is Monday, and it's a weary little bit of a Monday because we had a very busy, exhausting, tiring week last week with all the news of what went on in Las Vegas. And so I want to have a little iron sharpens iron Bible study with you this morning as one man sharpens another. So it says in Isaiah 1, verse 17, learn to do right, seek justice, defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow.
Okay, gee, you mean that advice goes back a couple thousand years?
It does. It's solid stuff, isn't it?
It is pretty solid stuff. You know, you could probably make a pretty impressive living promoting that agenda today.
Yes, you could.
Are you sure this is iron sharpens iron, or is it irony sharpening irony? That's
it's irony sharpening irony, I think, for sure.
What you're saying is that yet again, the Bible shows itself to be the original and only really necessary self-help book, and that every other book written since then is just commentary on the original material.
Preach it, brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm serious.
Well, you know, I'm feeling sharp because, you know, I had a good weekend because my 7-year-old son approached me with a glass of milk. He said, you know, this smells bad. And it was bad. And so I realized my work is done. He now has all the skills he needs to survive.
That's so true. And speaking of that, this will come in handy if for any reason your son EJ never gets married. The food bank at Welsh Food Bank did a double take last week when someone dropped off a can of soup. The Heinz kidney soup was nearly 50 years old, still labeled with an old price tag in a discontinued currency. You know, the average bachelor guy would go, what's your point?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, actually, the average bachelor might say, I've been looking for that. Was that in my sock drawer?
Is that for sale? I want that back.
Yeah, I bet that's in the original lead can. It can only be opened with a pocket knife. You know? That was before the can opener. They found that can.
Oh, it's very funny. So, of course, it is Columbus Day. Or if you live in Minneapolis, where I live, Minneapolis yeah. city offices will be closed today for Indigenous Peoples Day.
Yeah, and now Berkeley, California. When I was living in California, Berkeley did this probably 25 or so years ago. Los Angeles has finally followed suit, and they're all excited about it. And they're saying it's, you know, it's not about erasing history; it's about correcting history. And I guess you can do these kind of things all you want, but, you know, having lived in California, like when they had made this move originally, I said, but you guys also have a movement here that says that all of this land actually belongs to Mexico, that you had stolen the land from Mexico. And now you're disrespecting Christopher Columbus, who came over here from, I believe it was Italy.
Mm-hmm.
They do share verb conjugations, by the way. But so
I hung you out to dry on that one a little bit.
And I appreciate that. Yeah. Don't you think I won't keep going and pretend like it never happened?
Of course.
But, yeah, so if you were to say, okay, you have a movement like a La Raza-type movement that, you know, at their core, they're thinking, well, this land actually belongs to Mexico. So if you did give it back to Mexico, would they then celebrate the Indigenous Peoples Day saying, by the way, Columbus stole this land from the Native Americans, and then when you got over here, one of us was here first. One of us. So I guess we just need to trace all lands everywhere to the original inhabitants, which, since mankind was the last life form really essentially to land here, if you go just by the biblical Genesis report, this land belongs to the fish.
Well,
I think we should just name it appropriately.
Yeah.
Marlinville. Yes.
So we don't really need to call it Indigenous Peoples Day. We just call it Columbus Day. I do anyway.
I do. I've never bestowed sainthood upon Christopher Columbus. I just know that in our history, this is how we ended up here. And the greatest nation – people can disagree if they wish. The greatest nation with the most freedom and the most liberating principles for people in the history of the world was the end result. And so you may not like the way it started, but you have to say we're doing pretty good and we're a self-correcting people. So go ahead, erase all you want. But if you erase history, you know, there was a guy that said something about if you erase history, something would happen. But I erased him from my history, so I have no idea what it was he said.
Mm-hmm.
It was Santana. It was the band Santana.
I think you're right. Yeah. Do you remember that poem for how you remember when Columbus sailed the ocean blue? Do you remember how that one went?
Yes.
I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, it was in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue.
Yeah, without Dramamine, by the way.
Yeah, and then there was something about Paul Revere's ride in there.
I think you're mixing it up. So
I could be.
The holiday does come with much controversy, and obviously I want to pay honor to the Native Americans that were killed during the European colonialism. Obviously, mm-hmm. I have a sense of respect and honor for that, of course. But there, I don't know if we should be replacing Columbus Day. Many cities are doing that. Denver, Seattle, Phoenix, Portland, Albuquerque.
Yep, Los Angeles, obviously, and they're going – I think the thing that's funny is they've all kind of picked the same term, Indigenous Peoples Day, and it'll probably take a generation before people scratch their heads. Although my 7-year-old son, who can smell spoiled milk, said to me the other day when I told him they didn't have to go to school on Monday, and he said, yippee, mm-hmm. why? I said, well, it's Columbus Day, and he said, who's Columbus? And I thought, well, you know, you're 7. You kind of should know who Columbus was because, you know, he can tell me who quilted a flag in 1781. He's like, did you know that somebody named Sally Yates quilted the first flag before Betsy? You know, he can tell me that kind of stuff. I go, I'm glad they're teaching you everything in school, but Columbus? They haven't taught you about Columbus yet? And by the way, don't come to school on Monday. We can't tell you why. It's a secret, but you should enjoy the day. You're 7. You don't care.
Yeah. Oh, funny. So anyway, Patrick, there's a guy in New York that's giving out $50,000 of his own money by handing out $100 bills to complete strangers.
So that's a guy in New York. That's like a month's rent.
And he's choosing, he's choosing people at random, handing them cash. He says that all he asks for in return is that people be kind to others. His Do the Next Good Thing campaign hopes to bring positive vibes to an often chaotic world.
Yeah. Well, I love it, but, you know, he's that, so $50,000 divided by $100, that's 500 people, and, you know, he'll probably end up with at a group of people, and they'll all say, good morning, sir. And, you know, he'll run out of $100 bills about midway through, and the three guys that don't get the 100,
boy,
I think they're going to take back the good morning.
Yeah, they're going to definitely throw a stink. All right, Patrick, I'm going to take a little break. When we come back, we'll continue our lively conversation in just a minute. Speaking to Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. Be right back. Good morning. It's 18 minutes after the hour. Talking to Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. I want to continue my little Bible study I've got going with you this morning, Patrick. In Deuteronomy chapter 13, verse 4, it says, "It is the Lord your God you must follow, and him you must revere. Keep his commands and obey him. Serve him and hold fast to him."
Well, I'm seeing a theme here.
We try to do that here on the morning show.
Yeah, you know, so you've got to go to that biblical base, which essentially says, if you want the answers, you can. We've got them right here, and it's going to start with something that you know you're going to struggle with at times. Follow God's word.
Woo. Yes, and if you want to go your own way, and many do, you need to be prepared to suffer the consequences. And of course, headlines in the news over the weekend was the Harvey Weinstein. The movie producer who's now in a heap of trouble.
Well, I don't think he's in a heap of trouble. He's in a heap of bad publicity.
Okay.
For sure.
Yeah.
But it's Hollywood, and Hollywood will forgive as long as you have a part for me.
As long as you put me in your next movie.
Is this kind of the way they love to look the other way? But, you know, they're turning their heads at so many things. It's no wonder why these people are having a little bit of neck pressure. It's crazy. You know, not only will this thing blow over, they will resurrect him. And in less than a year, he'll have set up some sort of foundation. He starts out, it turns out that the guy who is all for women's rights has been for 30 plus years pretty abusive towards women.
Mm-hmm.
And Hollywood went silent. The talk shows went silent. And, you know, they did the old, but Trump. I go, oh, yeah, okay. There we go.
Mm-hmm.
Even Gloria Allred's daughter signed on as his attorney for almost a day. For almost a day.
And she didn't quite make it a day, did she?
She didn't quite make it. She said, you know, because he would ask women to watch him, you know, shower in his hotel room, which, you know, it's probably never a good idea to go visit somebody in a hotel room, especially if they have a bad reputation. But she said that she was going to talk to him and teach him that you can't say that kind of thing to women. And he said, "That's great. Should I be doing that conversation with you before or after you watch me take a shower?" I don't think you can teach a guy like this.
I'm not sure you can either. It certainly is a problem in Hollywood that there's acceptable standards that goes on. And you have said before, you don't really look to them to learn morals. And nor should any of us. Hollywood never respects or reflects my values, if I want to just put it bluntly.
Well, and if you're really looking for a source for moral clarity, if you're looking for a source, oh gosh, here we go. We're going to get back to your Deuteronomy again. You know.
Yeah. Let's do that, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of simple. It's kind of simple. Don't look to these outside. You might even call them false gods. You know, if you will, and even if you won't, I'm going to do it. But you shouldn't be looking to them for your moral anything. The Bible says it's over here. I got the answer right here. This is where you get your moral clarity, if you want to know how to do it, mm-hmm. how to work this thing called life, we got the answers right here.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't have outrage left. I mean, is it really all that surprising that, you know, somebody, and this is not to defend Harvey Weinstein, but what a surprise. Hey, somebody had failings. Somebody fell short, like all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm not defending him. And, you know, there's two levels of hypocrisy in the world. There are those of us who have standards that we fail on. And then there are those, and that, you know, that's one type of hypocrisy. The other type to me is the one who says, here are the moral standards that I will refuse to live up to, but I insist that you do. And I think that's a little bit more of what Harvey Weinstein, he falls into that category.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he makes these movies that preaches to us. And in the meantime, he's out violating every last one of them and saying, well, I'm not talking about me.
Right.
You know.
Well, you know, and when you get the larger the candy store that you have access to, probably the more candy you're going to participate in. And I'm just saying when it comes to power and money, you're going to have a lot more opportunities. Right.
I certainly, you know, there's that saying that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, too, that I've always been a believer that people do whatever they feel is working for them.
True.
And they won't stop. You know, there's the old movie Splash where John Candy drops coins on the ground, as a young man and then or as a young boy. And then he's doing the same thing, you know, 30 years later as a grown man. And his brother says, what are you doing that for? He goes, hey, something works for me. I stick with it. And you go, well, it's reprehensible behavior at this point in time. But, you know, for Harvey Weinstein, I'm guessing that this provided enough success for him that he stuck with the program.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing.
The New York Times had this story in 2004, but did not publish it because of pressure.
Yes. And, you know, you see these late night comedians again. They might try to touch the subject today because they're starting to look like, wow, you guys are circling the wagons around one of your own.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have to ask yourself a question. You go, well, why now? Okay, so in 2004, you wouldn't do it because of pressure. But what happened in 2017 that you decided it's time to finally find – you allowed 13 more years of serial abuse to occur, and you sat on it because of some kind of pressure. And in 2017, you finally decided enough's enough. Or is it that Harvey Weinstein hasn't produced a hit movie that has made any money in 5 or 6 years? And just like with Bill Cosby, when you knew a lot of the stuff was going on, you said, he is no longer of use to us. He no longer holds power over us. He's on his way down. So let's just clear our own conscience and say, yeah, we knew. It's disturbing that if they had the report in 2004, you go, you sat on that for 13 years minimum that we know of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know, for the report together, but that's a little bit disturbing.
I think it is too. Patrick, let's wrap up our time this morning, kind of how we started. Learn to do right, seek justice, defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow. And in Deuteronomy 13:4, it says, it is the Lord your God you must follow, and him you must revere. Keep his commandments and obey him, serve him, and hold fast to him. Parting thoughts.
Yeah. Well, you know, I always like to leave people with a little bit of trivia because, you know, you give them the little brown paper bag, take something home with
sure,
you.
Sure, right.
This is a little trivia for you. Did you know that the Department of Waste, Fraud, and Abuse has never come in under budget?
I love that. That's going to go in my brown paper bag right to the water cooler today. Odd facts known by few, and I can always count on getting them from you. Thanks, Patrick.
Well, that's my specialty.
I know it is. That's what I love about you. One of the many things I love about you.
Yes. Just ditto to everything you said biblically. You want the answers? Here's your source. That's what the Early Morning Late Show is all about.
I couldn't agree more. I'll talk to you later.
Great. Thank you.
Yep. It is 27 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break. and listen to Lighten Up with Ken Davis. Be back in a minute. Good morning. It's half past the hour. We're going to take a little break for news, and then Dr. Professor Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College will be here. PhD, straight A student. I'm a solid C student. Should be a very interesting conversation. Be back in a minute. It's 25 minutes until the top of the hour. When we live our lives gripped in fear, we limit the trust we put in God. Max Lucado says more about this.
Our fears can become the definition of our lives, that we route our lives around our fears, or we shape our lives according to our fears. You know, that we make decisions based on not doing this or this not happening or avoiding that. And we live a very defensive, cautious life. I think it's helpful to say that anxiety in and of itself is not a sin. It's an emotion. But living in a state of perpetual anxiety is a sin, in the sense that it is an act of rebellion. That's kind of hard to hear, but I mean, it's like saying, God cannot get me through this problem. And so to remain in a state of anxiety over the long haul pulls us away from God, and it results in some very negative consequences in our lives.
Lousy emotions. Anyway, if you want to hear that full interview, you can go to myfaithradio.com, type in Max Lucado. And it's also called Defined Grace, Refinement. Type in any of those words, and it'll help you get there. We'll take a short break, and Dr. Adam Carrington is already on our studio line. Can't wait to talk to him.
Pastors are being accused of slacking off of emphasizing mature Christianity. True or false? This is Jim Garlow. George Barna made an indicting statement about American pastors. He contends that American pastors, largely evangelicals, are quite willing to be evangelistic. In other words, getting people saved. But they seem quite unwilling to lead them into the sanctification process, into Christian maturity. And I would contend that's why 92 out of 100 Americans sitting in the pew today have an inadequate biblical worldview. And when it comes to millennials, 96 out of 100 attending evangelical churches have no biblical worldview to speak of. Like the Israelites crossing the promised land, who tiptoed to the edge but didn't take the land as God commanded them, we're following in their footsteps. I encourage you, get into the Word, let it sanctify you, take the land. This is Jim Garlow.
Oh, that wakes you up. That is Adam Carrington's walk-on music. Good morning, Adam.
How are you, Bill?
I'm good. How was your weekend?
It was good. Spent a lot of time with the family, and the baby decided to wake up about 5 a.m. both mornings, so we got an early start.
Adam, welcome to my world.
Yes, I know that many people have lived our life before.
Oh no, so I'm just saying on Saturdays, 5 o'clock is sleeping in.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
When you do a morning radio show, it's like 3:15, it's time to get up. Anyway, well, you know, it's great that your baby is healthy and you guys are having a great time and it's all good.
It is. Yeah. She's a real joy. So we're just taking day by day with her and very happy to have her.
And because you need these little everyday simple hourly joys that you get from life, because if we look at what happened last week, I have to tell you, has the potential to drain a lot of energy out of our everyday joy.
It does, and the tragedy that happened in Las Vegas, just the scale of it and the horror of it, you run out of ways to adequately describe how terrible it was, and the amount of lives destroyed and forever changed is something that I think that we need we need to concentrate on what blessings we do have given that circumstance.
Adam, is it a good idea to make policy in the middle of crisis? I know that gun regulation is now a hot topic in the wake of what happened in Las Vegas.
I don't think in the immediate aftermath, no. And I think that's partly why our legislative process is sort of slow, halting, and deliberate, because I think it wants to keep us from knee-jerk reactions. Even the founders, when they talked about our legislative process, criticized acting impulsively. And what it means is you can act out of perfectly good and even very good intentions and not see what the possible collateral damage repercussions could be from legislation. So I think it is something we need to ask, are there ways that we can keep this from happening again? And I think there might be ways that we can help to mitigate that danger. But I think it's something that we need to have not a knee-jerk reaction, but a good discussion about what actually could be done to address a tragedy like this from happening again.
Mm-hmm. Adam, I think only gun enthusiasts were even familiar with the word bump stock up until last week. I did a little bit of research, and I think the inventor, Bill Aiken, tried to simulate with this little device, had a spring in it, and it was able to recoil. He couldn't get it passed, so it sat there for a while. And then this Jeremiah Cottle said, I can probably create the same device without using the spring, and he got it passed. And, of course, now the sales of these are through the roof because they're talking about outlawing them. But you can also simulate the same activity by looping your thumb in your belt buckle, in your belt loop. So it's like we can't outlaw belt loops.
No, and actually, I think that is the discussion that seems to be going on with these idea of bump stocks, which the result is it makes it so that semi-automatic weapons, where you have to re-pull the trigger each time, can operate about the same speed as an automatic weapon, something like a machine gun, which are banned in the United States. So that is a question of, is that the correct response? And I think that it's interesting, even the National Rifle Association is open to possibly banning bump stocks and trying to find ways of making it so that at least some of these devices that can basically turn semi-automatic weapons into machine guns, trying to get them off the streets. You're right that it seems like there's no perfect answer. There seem to be ways to jerry-rig this no matter what. The question is, are there ways to limit or mitigate the damage that could be done by making some of these ways of doing so harder to get a hold of?
Mm-hmm. We've always had tight regulations on fully automatic weapons. It's been a part of our gun laws forever. So it seems that banning these things would be okay, too. I mean,
yeah, in many ways, that is, I think, the argument that even the National Rifle Association is saying is really this. We almost no one is arguing against the ban on machine guns. The idea is all of the uses that we believe the Second Amendment covers don't necessarily need a machine gun to accomplish. Therefore, this is really just trying to fill a loophole rather than add a new gun restriction. And I think that unlike a lot of times after these sorts of tragedies where people who are in favor of extensive, even confiscating gun control, typically their responses have almost nothing to do with the tragedy. And I think that's partly why they've often failed, almost always have failed in the last few years, to actually get something out of these tragedies as far as legislation. This is one instance where you might actually have something directly related to the event, even though it's much less than many in that lobby would like to see happen.
Mm-hmm. Adam, do you understand the motivation behind the comment Brett Stevens made? I mean, he's a conservative that was calling for the repeal of this Second Amendment.
Yeah, this caused a lot of consternation, and understandably so, because I've mentioned a number of times that what holds the right together at this point politically seems to be fairly thin. There's a lot of divisions, but one that seems to be fairly consistent is a support of the Second Amendment as protecting an individual right to own a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that Stevens has jumped ship on that, and I think it really shows that at least some conservatives, especially those who are particularly opposed to the president, are rethinking some of their views on guns and other things. And I think it shows a bit of the disconnect between him and some of the voters that he at least before was aligned with.
Mm-hmm. You would normally think Bret Stephens is a pretty reasonable guy. I don't think he wants to do with a complete blanket erase of the Second Amendment. Amendment. He just wants to say, what do we need? Everyone able to get a gun.
Yeah, and actually that is the weird thing about his, the sort of thing to get people to read the article was he said, repeal the Second Amendment. Well, that seems pretty straightforward. He then afterwards says, I actually would not vote for a ban on guns legislatively, even if the Second Amendment was repealed. He seems to want to make it a educational tool that mm-hmm. if you don't believe you have the constitutional right to own a gun, then people will be more sensible in how guns are regulated, not that they'll be taken away entirely. I think that's a very debatable prospect, but I think it is. I think you are right to bring up that when he says repeal the Second Amendment, he doesn't then go say and ban all guns. It's
right.
Interesting that he has a more educational view as to what that would do, not a legislative view.
Mm-hmm. Adam, I know that the Trump administration is trying to allow for more exemptions for the birth control mandate, just to give people with religious objections that option. So when we come back from break, I want to ask you about that and where that's headed. I'm talking to Dr. Adam Carrington. It's 15 minutes until the top of the hour. Thanks for being with us. Be back in a minute. Good morning. It's 12 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to straight-A student Dr. Adam Carrington, who's on our studio line. Adam, I want to ask you about the Trump administration rolling back the birth control mandate for people that have religious objections.
Sure. And this was, of course, a significant issue with the Green family that owned Hobby mm-hmm. Lobby, who objected to a part of the Affordable Care Act, the Obamacare law, that basically said that you have to provide preventative health services for women, but that those were understood by law to include birth control, including the Green family particularly was upset that some of these they believed medically could not and didn't prevent a pregnancy from occurring, but actually aborted an unborn child afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they won a fairly narrow victory in a court case, but a lot of issues were unresolved. What about Roman Catholic groups that are against all kinds? What about how broad, how many people get exemptions from this? Is it very narrow or broad? And what the Trump administration did, and I think a big win for people with those objections and people who are in the religious community, Christian, Protestant, Roman Catholic, is that they expanded those exemptions significantly. So basically most organizations that have a religious, and they even added a moral, non-religious moral objection to providing birth control options, basically get an exemption from having to follow the mandate. So massive change from what had happened before in the past administration.
Mm-hmm. Adam, this is just a question. Two Christian white guys talking about birth control. Should the government offer free birth control to everybody?
I think that constitutionally, I don't think there is any obligation to do so. As a matter of policy, I think that the Constitution certainly allows it. I think the question being, you know, those who think it is a right say that it's a question of equality, that men and women can participate in what leads to children, and the woman has an unfair, unequal disadvantage because of the pregnancy. on the other hand, the question I think is you know, does the government have an interest actually in protecting the creation and then sustaining of children based on the fact that it needs citizens and the fact that it is dedicated to the right to life? And I think those in the religious community are looking more at that latter and saying that is a better understanding of what government should be doing and how government should be helping, and that the differences between men and women should be addressed, but should be addressed in ways that support the raising and creating of families, doesn't look at it as the burden that I think the other side looks at it as.
Mm-hmm. When we think of the way God has ordained sex in the context of marriage, would it then be the family's responsibility to regulate birth control and how they go about that? And is there something about the way the world operates that says unbiblical sex should be something that should be covered all the time, so the government should pay for it? I don't know. I'm asking a tough question here.
Yeah, I mean, it is not a naughty question, K-N-O-T-T-Y, I should say.
Yeah.
And of course, we are both men talking about it. I know
yes.
This is something I've tried to talk with my wife a lot about to, you know, get a perspective that, you know, isn't my own. But yeah, I think that we have to ask ourselves, what is the role of the family and what autonomy should the family have to not only make its own decisions, but also to not have the government give an alternative to the family. And I think that particularly there is a reason why not only the family and the church, but also government has been interested in how human beings express themselves sexually. And it's been because of what it can do to human psychology if it's done outside of God's plan, what it can do to society when children aren't raised by their biologically married parents. And I think that in our time and place, we have downplayed not just the religious problems with that, but we've downplayed what it does to us as a society, and that if anything, government should be encouraging the autonomy of the family, but also the structure of the family in that autonomy.
Mm-hmm. So, Adam, should the government force a citizen to do something or pay for something that's against their understanding of God's way and God's moral law?
I think that that is a great question that I think Christians need to be having more. And I think part of that I think the answer is no. I think that the special protection the First Amendment gives to religious freedom makes that clear, or should make that clear. And I think that the question that needs to be asked more and more within Christianity, and especially I think Protestant circles, is figuring out what that law tells us, not merely the scriptural mandates that we see about worship, but also the concept of natural law, that there's this long-standing idea that that God has imprinted on our minds and hearts what justice is, and that government should be regulated to protect and to inculcate those things, not to be in opposition to them. But I think Christianity needs to have more and more that kind of discussion of what does that include, so that we can then talk to government and say, you know, these are the protections that religious people need in order to live out their lives according to their faith.
Mm-hmm. Adam, if I may switch topics here a little bit, I want to ask you about Rex Tillerson. And of course, it seems that in Washington, you are willing to attack anybody and try to destroy anything in order to advance your agenda. I would think that culture would be so poisonous, but Tillerson is now up against the resignation rumors and that he called the president a moron, which he says I didn't do. Where do we go with all this?
Washington, D.C. is more and more sounding like a junior high dance where people are in hushed corners gossiping about each other. It would be comical if it wasn't so serious as far as what they're talking about. And
mm-hmm.
I think what you have to hopefully DC can get past is a lot of this personality-based politics. Our politics is so personality-based in what we think about the president as a human being, what he thinks about other people as human beings, rather than focusing on, while accepting everyone's humanity, focusing on policy, focusing on what are we going to do about North Korea, about taxes, about the economy, about trade, immigration. And I think that when you have such a personality-based politics, this kind of squabbling gets in the way of what should really be talked about and what really I think would be a benefit to the American people.
Mm-hmm. And just in conclusion, we've got about another 40 seconds. Tim Murphy was a Republican, and he said, "I was pro-life. I'm pro-life." And then he has a mistress that gets pregnant, and he tells her to abort the baby. It was a tough one.
Yeah, and I think on one hand, I think it should make us understand, you know, teenage mothers and the much, much greater stress they live under and be compassionate, but at the same time, call out in this situation, which is not nearly as distressful, hypocrisy where it is. That mm-hmm. the pro-life movement needs to be consistent, it needs to be supportive of the women involved, and it needs to uphold an ethic of life even when it's inconvenient, especially if we're going to ask women to do the same.
Yeah. Adam, always a delight. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and I'll speak to you again in a couple of weeks, I hope.
Sounds great. Hope you have a great 2 weeks, and always thank you for having me on.
You bet. Dr. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College. 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a very short break. Be right back. It is 2 minutes until the top of the hour. We've got a great second hour coming up. Dr. Tom Nelson, president of Made to Flourish, is going to be with us. There is a Common Good conference coming up, and we're going to try to find ways in which we can help others flourish. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.